Hey, Club Random Fans, guess what I did? I wrote a damn book. It's called What This Comedian Said Will Shock You, and it's available for pre-order now where you get your books or at simonandschuster.com. You were at Woodstock.
Yeah, they called me and I said, all right, but it's got to be the prime spot.
You went on at 3 a.m.
Yep. Club.
When did it end?
When I met my beautiful wife, Julie. Probably the moment I laid eyes on her, actually. Club.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just
good
thrilled
to
meet you.
Nice shirt.
I wore it for you.
Oh, thank you.
I swear to God. I was thinking, you know, like Jerry on his coffee show, he like picks out a car for people. You know, that's the show. Like he thinks of a car that would be appropriate. I think, well, sometimes I do that with the clothes. Like I was like, this is my John Fogerty shirt.
That works.
Because it's like, you know, real American, but there's a little glitz to it. It's got a little sparkle there, as I always thought you did. I mean, in a good way. And totally not a gay way.
Right. My wife is the one responsible for the shirts. She makes the shirts, right?
But I feel like you always had that look.
And, well, thank you. Yeah, going way back, but you can't get those anymore.
I mean, and your accent, you know, was very middle of the country, shall we say. I mean, I always thought, like when I, as a kid, when I was worshiping all those singles coming on the radio, my little tinny radio that you know, you did this kind of songs the Beatles used to say, like, has to sound good even on a shitty radio. You know, and all your songs were in that category.
Well, thank you for that. I actually tried to make the songs so they would sound good in a car. And that was
even harder.
Well, my take on it was because there were certain songs, you know, growing up that were fantastic in a car. And basically the car, you know, you want to hear the voice, you want to hear the guitar, and you want to hear the beat, you know, the drum, in other words. And that's about all you need in a car at that fills it all up.
Well,
the
no,
other stuff is sort of in the background.
No, you need a good song.
Yeah, I'm just that's talking about the sonic version, you know, the
yeah, but like,
sound quality.
Now, it's impossible to say why you like a song or not. I find that. I mean, I either...
Oh, no, I'm pretty opinionated.
No, I am too. I'm just saying to put into words. Like, you could play me Proud Mary or any one of your great songs, and then... a song that sounds, you know, if you were just describing it, you couldn't tell the difference. Great guitar, blah, blah, blah. But one works and one doesn't. One just works and one doesn't. I mean, sorry, all the 2 million people putting out music on Spotify and they all say, why we're not getting equal play. Yeah, because you suck. Because we are the consumer. We're going to go toward the super talented great music, and I can hear it immediately, but I couldn't tell it to somebody.
You just said it. It sucks.
I know. It's like you can't say, like, we all know what, like, a supermodel looks like, and we know what a very, you know, there's no ugly people in the world. Let me get that out very clear.
Oh, boy. PC. PC.
But I'm like, okay, so describe it between, like, a supermodel and some other woman who's attractive but just not a supermodel. You can't put it into words. They're, you know, it's not like
well,
one.
You can, but that may not.
Go ahead.
Translate. You're so funny because when I was around 11 or 12, my brother Tom, who was older than me, and he had already made he'd been with a couple of different bands that he knew. You know, he was in another orbit.
So Tom
he was
is older than you.
Yeah, about 4 years older.
So you're like this Mother's Brothers, where the younger one was the leader.
Oh, my God, you've just opened a whole
right? You know this Mother's Brother?
Yeah, of course.
He just died. I know him.
Tom, yeah.
I know him not really well, but pretty well. And
I don't think we met, but he sent me a couple letters back
up,
in the day.
That's up in your, they were up in the northern part of the state, Tom and Dick.
I didn't know that. They were TV people to me.
Right.
But Tom especially was rebellious. And liberal, well, so.
But he was also the talent. Not that Dickie wasn't good, but Dickie was a straight man. Tommy was the guy who you know, he was the leader of that show. I mean, that's why the show got canceled, because Tommy was a revolutionary. You know, he was a rebel, and he was not going to be stopped, and he was not going to be, at a certain point, abided by CBS.
When Pete Seeger came on TV, wasn't it on their show?
Everybody who was on the wrong side.
Yeah. Well, there was a moment there when Pete came on and sang Big Muddy, I'm pretty sure. And that was,
well, they were, I mean, they were
people taking offense to, you know, we used to talk about the Vietnam War.
Criticizing the Vietnam War when that was still controversial. And of course, this is Sunday night.
It was controversial.
I believe.
Controversial until we left. You know, that last helicopter got pushed off the aircraft carrier. I mean, stopped being controversial.
In the sense, you mean that there are people today who think we absolutely should have fought the war, the Vietnam War. I mean, there are still people who think that. I am more sympathetic to the...
How did we get here? Boy, it didn't take long, did it?
Why? Why? What are you saying? It always comes back to Vietnam?
No, but, you know, there was an Iraq war. I'm sorry, I got to go here. There was a war in Iraq, and I wrote a song called Deja Vu.
And, yeah, I know it. I've heard it.
I was just, you know, I was flown to New York. I was going to do it on Good Morning America. And suddenly, I mean, we're probably in the afternoon the day before, they're pushing back. So, oh, you can't sing that song, right? I mean, Iraq, Vietnam.
I get it.
Yeah.
And so. Sleepless Nights, that song?
Huh?
Is that about that?
No, it's a song I wrote. It's a song I recorded about 2004.
So go back to Iraq, though. So you're saying...
And I was about to be on, and the show was saying, he can't come on and sing that song.
Oh, wow.
And so, I'm not going to come on and sing something else. That was the whole
right.
What we're doing. So finally, they thought about it for a few hours and decided that they didn't want to... Look, I can't read people's minds,
right.
But it just seemed like if you make such a big stink, you're actually making it worse than just doing
it. Of course.
Right?
They always do that.
And so,
yeah,
you know, you get up very early in the morning to go do those morning shows. And Charlie Gibson, he was not happy that I was there because he was supporting in the fine tradition of people who think they're supporting the flag and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we're all Americans, right? Not just the ones who waved the flag all the time. Yeah.
What? Ooh, they.
So he was very unhappy, and he made it a point to try. He was really trying to embarrass me with questions and making it look like I was a lazy rock and roll privileged, overpaid, you know, musician. And he's probably right, but
yeah,
I had a little pushback, and I think we came out even, but he was really unhappy that I was there. And, you know, since he owned the show, I mean, he was the dude, he got to say a few things that without the other side retorting. Right. At the end of the deal, though, we're all standing watching through that window or something, you know, he comes over and kind of, I don't know. I felt okay about it. He shook my hand, and I accept that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to embarrass me on camera.
But did you?
Because I wrote a song that kind of was kicking the can about this war we were getting into. So is that war okay now,
can
too?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I have a clear memory, but I know that the mind, my phrase is the mind moves the furniture. Like over the years, you can swear that you remember, but I have a clear memory of seeing you sing Fortunate Son on Ed Sullivan.
Yep.
Am I wrong?
No, I'm pretty
sure
that happened.
You sang it on Ed Sullivan.
Sure.
Right. Okay, well, that to me, I mean, I was 14, this would be 1970.
Yeah.
Yes. 14, you know, just thinking about the adults think of, you want to be an adult. So like there, and of course these were times, very politically explosive times. So like that band, you know, singing that song on Ed Sullivan, that was not quite Smothers Brothers territory, but that, I don't think that's what Ed would have mostly wanted. I mean, that was a show for everybody Sunday night. And this is a very corrosive, you know, America sucks in this manner song, which is not really what you got in 1970 on Sunday night.
Yeah, somehow.
You don't have any memory of that?
Nobody gave you a shit about it. Creedence
Ed
Clearwater
didn't come backstage and go,
was
you
know, on three
why don't
times.
You sing that song about the Proud Mary? That's, I don't know. That's
tonight,
more uplifting,
right here
John,
on our show,
the
for you little chickadees, the Beatles.
Or,
yeah, hey.
What is this rummage sale that you're talking about? This is a family show. We don't want that.
Well, I think that's generally true, but I think, and also Ed's producers, I think his son-in-law was the actual producer of the show, who I met, they were just into entertainment.
What about after the show? There was no outcry? There was no, like, why are you having that subversive message?
It was before we had TikTok and all that sort of thing.
Right.
So the outcry would have been all of the old people, not the young people.
But there's a song that came out last year that was a giant hit. I'm sure you know it. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was not a professional musician. I think it was Oliver Anthony, maybe is the name. He was like just a regular guy. He put it on TikTok. It was called Rich Men North of Richmond.
Yeah.
You know that song?
Yeah.
It was a giant sensation.
Yeah.
That to me is very similar. You know, that the feel of that, fortunate son. You know, I'm not the fortunate one. I'm not the fortunate son. We're living here and just getting by America. And these Northmen, they tried to make it a racist thing. That, I don't think it was. Northmen, north of Richmond, north of Richmond, he means Washington, D.C.
The government. Or New York even, you know.
Yes. Maybe, but I think he meant the government. North of Richmond is Washington.
Right.
Okay. So, but I feel like there is a strong spiritual connection between the lyrics of Fortunate Son. You know, the house, when the tax man come, the house looks like a rummage sale, but they're spending money. And you know, that whole working class thing, I feel like was recapitulated a lot in the Oliver Anthony song. Do you know the song?
I don't know it intimately. I just know the furor that it caused. Perhaps other folks, what's the word, appropriated the song for their intentions rather than what the...
Of course they did, because that's all we do in America is appropriate everything for your cause or your intentions.
Look.
Exactly. There's no honest...
President Trump, while he still was president, was campaigning... And at the end of his rally, as he got into the jet and flew away, he was playing Fortunate Son.
It's a great song, you know.
You kind of go, I mean, that's a jaw dropper, isn't it? Because had I been able to, I would have written the song about him. But of course, I was 50 years ahead of that.
you're saying he doesn't quite see the irony.
Oh, you've asked another question, and I'm...
Well, you know what it is.
Without getting really whatever, I wonder about that. That's the best I can say. I don't know that he does or that he doesn't. I think he just... I think there's some things that are instinct. I'm capable of that myself, by the way. You just... Later, people tell you, hey, man, that was so shrewd. And you're going, what? Because you didn't... You just were... It comes from inside, whatever that art is or that moment, right?
Right.
And I think in the case of Trump using different songs, I think he's just, I like that song. I'm going to play it here, you know. And it,
of course, he doesn't think about anything.
Yeah.
People are always overestimating him, really overestimating. I understand he's very successful in this quest he has to overturn the government. But there's never any planning in it. It's just... He fumbles forward constantly. He's just, you know, you can't take your eyes off him because he's insane. Insanity photographs. And that's, there's, but whenever they ascribe to him any sort of planning or any sort of scheming, it's like,
I think it's day to day.
It's just, exactly. It's just reacting. It's pure id. And, you know, We'll see how it comes out. But
you know what? You mentioned my shirt, and I brought you a gift. My wife makes these shirts. Her company, our company, is called Fortunate Son.
Of course.
And
thank you.
She has several different plaid designs.
Oh, I like it.
That one's a really pretty one. I like this color.
So you are in a clothing, in the shmata business now?
Shmata?
Shmata, I love it. You don't know anything about the Jews, do you? I'm not even Jewish. Shmata is like the
clothing
rag industry.
Right.
You know, that I think.
How it really came about is that I couldn't find, going to the store. There are Western shirts, but not many, especially at that time, about 15 years ago, I think, a plaid shirt, particularly just this.
Right.
And for this one, she took an old photo of me, at 24 or something. I had an acoustic guitar on. And I said, I used to wear that shirt all the time. And luckily it was in color. And so she got it duplicated and I get to wear that shirt now, which I lost, 50 years ago.
Boy, you aged well. It is interesting when you have the rock star gene that you're sort of given these other things. Like Mick Jagger, he's like
incredible.
89 years old or something, and he has a 22-inch waist.
Yeah.
And he always did, and he always will, and he'll never die because he is the devil.
It's Keith.
Yeah, but a charming one.
I think Mick takes care of himself.
He does. I'm kidding. Of course.
Yeah, Keith doesn't. So,
and
Keith is sitting there going, look at that guy, he's working out. I think it's what Canseco said on the A's. He said, you guys all, I just take steroids. Ha!
But Keith Richards did clean up his act.
Did he?
Yes, recently. I'm pretty sure I read that. I think including smoking,
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't smoke, but I did a long time ago.
So did I.
Of course I'm happy, but really I want to feign disappointment. It's like, Keith, man.
If you want to go to an NBA playoff basketball game or a summer concert, you have to be smart about getting the best seats in the house. You either have season tickets or know some rich guy who will take you. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like that if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/random. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best candidates fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/random. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/random. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Back when I used to go out drinking, and boy did I, the next day I always wished I hadn't. But that was before a new product that lets you feel fresh after a night of hitting the town. ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by a PhD scientist to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel your best the next day. Between vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions, there's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now. Go to ZBiotics.com/random to get 15% off your first order when you use random at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/random and use the code RANDOM at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times. Oh, my God. If when people ask you that question, like, what's the first concert you ever saw?
Concert, yeah.
You know what mine was? You.
Really?
Not just you. There was something called the Concert for Peace at Shea Stadium. Do you remember doing it?
Yeah.
You were on it.
Yeah.
It was like 20, I don't know.
Sha-na-na was
there. Sha-na-na was definitely there. You do remember.
Yeah, but oh, Paul Simon was there, because I remember talking to him about early rock and roll, especially Ooby Dooby, which he liked. I had just covered that. But, God, there was a ton of people there.
Right.
Bunch of acts. Janis Joplin was there. Cause I remember I came off stage. I was walking back.
Wow.
You know, it was a stadium.
No.
Shea Stadium.
Right? Shea Stadium.
She was sitting up on the, you know, it was so blurry. And I was a kid. You know,
I went with my sister.
A train going so fast, right? And I walked by these stairs and I went, hey, that was Janis Joplin. And she was kind of sitting on it like this. I don't think she had a bottle of, you know, hooch in her hand, but you'd heard all those stories. I mean, in a nanosecond, I processed that, kind of walked backwards. I looked up, and she hadn't moved. She was still like that, and I kind of went, you know, and because it was a character. It was almost like shtick, and she just this tiniest little. You know, she understood what I was doing because she hadn't moved, right?
Wow.
sure, a lot of folks were.
Wow.
That was cool. Wait,
was that 69 or 70?
I think it was 70.
Okay. Right. I was probably 14. Listen to this. I went to this concert with my sister in a Nehru jacket.
Yeah. Sure.
A Nehru jacket.
Sure.
You remember the Nehru jacket?
Yep.
Nehru was the, for the kids, kids, God, who remember this? Nehru I was even not around for this. He was the first prime minister of India. And he wore this cool fucking jacket with like this little, like, it almost looked like a priest's thing, but not with it, with the white collar underneath. And it was
kind of. Yeah, the real person wore that. Yeah.
A real person wore that. And then for some reason, of course, it was the late 60s. We're all hippies. It became like a thing. And they got me one. Like, I never got clothes for like one Christmas. Like, I guess I was the phone.
Yeah,
14.
But that was a very symbolic. I believe, you know, if you trace it, it probably started with the Beatles going to India. Right?
Yes.
And then
probably right.
So things
yes.
happen. I mean, eventually.
Exactly.
You were seeing people on Laugh-In, you know, with Nehru jackets on, right?
Right.
Good night, Dick. Good night. whatever. And, you know, that was all the thing. And then medallions and all the rest. By the time that started to happen, that's when the kids probably dropped it.
Yeah, but it was not a smart thing to wear. On like a hot August night, it was not. I should have worn a T-shirt. What am I going to be James Bond at 14? I'm wearing this.
I think it's sweet. I think because it's so.
It is.
It's a snapshot in time.
It is.
I mean, they never came back.
But I think you. I think you headlined.
Probably
I think CCR was the headline act.
Yep.
I mean. I can't imagine a bigger band at the time. Not in America, obviously the Beatles, but maybe the Stones. But I mean, as far as American bands, this is before the Eagles.
Yep.
A little bit before the Eagles. Led Zeppelin they started in 69.
They started about the same time as Proud Mary.
Yeah.
Right. So we'd already had 68. A hit and a half a hit, Susie Q and I.
Yeah, I call that the starter hit.
Yeah.
Like the Beatles had Love Me Do. That's a starter hit.
Right.
It's not my favorite.
Right.
I'm sorry, neither is Susie Q.
Yeah.
You've got so many dozens more, you know, but you're young.
Yeah.
And people liked it, so great. And you had your hit. But, I mean, where you grew from there was like leaps and bounds. Just to Proud Mary. And then Long As I Can See the Light and, you know, Who'll Stop the Rain, all those songs that are just, I mean, you made that leap from just having the kids like you to making an adult like me, super adult like you. You know, that's something a lot of pop stars don't do. You know, those were much more, you were a grown-ass man a little bit more.
Well, I've always thought, of course, I didn't know any of this then.
But I'm telling you.
But there's that thing when you're a kid and you discover a new band, new artists. It happened, I think, more with bands. And they make a record, as you call it, the starter hit, you know, and then maybe they go along with a couple of those. They've caught your attention, and they're pretty cool, right?
Right.
And then they're going along, and suddenly they do Hey Jude, or they do Satisfaction. You know, it's a leap up, right? And because you'd already liked them, and they were pretty cool, Beach Boys, Beach Boys.
I got to stop you.
Okay.
Hey Jude and Satisfaction came at very different points of those two careers. Satisfaction came at fairly the beginning. That was 1965. Again, they had.
Well, I knew the Stones pretty well by then.
The Stones.
I'd already seen them.
They started in '62. They had a starter hit with a Lennon and McCartney song, "I Want to Be Your Man."
Yeah, I didn't really know
exactly
about it.
Starter hit. Yeah. Not that good.
Yeah,
they did "Carol." I think they covered a Chuck Berry song.
I think that was their first.
Oh, by the way, I had this argument with someone before the show. Brown Eyed Handsome Man.
Yeah.
That's Chuck Berry. When you're citing him in that song.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, because he wrote in Brown Eyed Handsome Man.
Yes.
He several different verses.
Called himself that and had a song called that.
Right. But the different verses sort of, and this was Chuck Berry's genius. It's one song, but he's got seven stories in there. And one of them was about a woman walking across the sand. What is that? Flying across the desert in a TWA. I saw a woman walking across the sand, right? You look down from your jet from 35,000 feet. I see a woman walking across the sand. She'd been walking 30 miles en route to Bombay to meet a brown-eyed, handsome man.
Chuck either saw you from 30,000 feet or through the peephole in the bathroom, okay? Well, I mean, he had some issues, so...
I'm sorry that human beings are so effed up.
Let's just say spatially he was all over the map.
Right. But anyway, in this song, 2-3 the count, with nobody on, he hit a high fly into the stand. Round in third, he was headed for home. It was a brown-eyed handsome man that won the game. It was a brown-eyed handsome man. I mean, because I love baseball anyway. But that was... only one of many stories in that same song. Incredible.
I heard that they play center field on a loop at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York.
Awesome. Wow. Not, I got to go there.
Not for the security guard. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying.
I was fortunate enough to be invited to, they had a 50-year Hall of Fame ceremony in '89, and I got to go there and, you know, hang out with baseball players. It was pretty cool. And then at some point they inducted the song Center Field into the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I mean, I grew up really loving baseball.
And the Giants, the San Francisco Giants?
Giants were first, but before that was the Yankees, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I was a little kid.
Me too.
3-4 years old. My dad, well, there were no teams on the out here, you know.
Really? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so baseball was a mythical thing. So my dad would talk about Babe Ruth.
So you're talking about the 50s.
And because this was probably 1948, 49.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You look great. What are you, 80 now?
Gonna be.
Fucking, wow, that's great for me to know. Because as you get older and older, you meet less and less people older than you. So it's good to know when you meet one that, like, oh, wow, that's a good thing to shoot for. I mean, you don't advertise 80 at all. So that's...
I don't think about it. I probably think about it more than I used to.
Look, you're almost the same age as Biden, but you just don't, like, some people project age and some don't. This is the problem with Trump. he could be a million and he's just this brand. You know, it doesn't, their age doesn't matter. It's the shock of yellow at the top, the red tie. It's like McDonald's, red and yellow. You know, you just see this thing, this brand. It could be a million years old.
Well, if you wear dark glasses, a hat, and you have a beard, you're going to look the same at 90 that you did at 24.
Yeah, but who wants to do that?
Well, exactly. I'm just saying, yeah. Just saying, you know.
But anyway, wow. Back to Hey Jude and Satisfaction.
Well, all I meant was there's a...
No. Satisfaction
sorry.
Was 1965.
It's 1960- your show.
No. Satisfaction was 1965. It was the Stones' first, like, mega hit like that. That's what you're talking about. Hey Jude was 1968. We had already had Beatlemania. We had already had Sgt. Pepper. They were coming to the end. They had, like, another... Basically,
oh, I didn't think so. At that moment, I didn't.
No, at that moment, you didn't. But I'm saying, Hey Jude didn't make people go, whoa, the Beatles are good. That had happened.
I agree with that because that was the point I was trying to
whereas
make.
Whereas with the Stones, Satisfaction was like, I mean, I was 9. I wasn't into music yet. But I know from the history and their greatest hits round, that was their big breakthrough hit. Before that, it was good, but I can't remember a song before that from the Stones. Was like,
oh, they had
Ruby.
Tell Me. They had
Tell Me. Don't even know that.
That's the first album.
I don't think that was like.
God, that was really great. It was one of their originals, even though that first album was a lot of blues.
Well, you're fucking old, so you know this shit. I don't.
Well, I had the first album, and I thought the Stones were incredible. I'd already seen them a couple of times. But the point I was trying to make, and I think your Sgt. Pepper example is way better than what I said, but God, if I could think of some other bands like that, where they're a certain way that you've accepted, and then suddenly they do something really magnificent, and you go, did they dare to do that? And you realize that that's where they are.
Well, Cosmos, you know, is one of those albums that, like there's probably
that.
Only, I mean, like, I've been collecting music, like, into music since around that, exactly that time. That was really my first big year. I was 13 in 69. Uh-huh. My first book, it hit you. You hit puberty, music gets in you. Before that, it was Little League, you know, and,
sure.
it wasn't girls. Now it was girls and music. They go together.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was, so that's a very long time. And like, are there 50, maybe 100 at most albums where like all the songs are good? Because usually albums was like, sometimes it was one song, and then you were like, oh, thanks, the American breed. Yeah, I like Bend Me, Shake Me, but the rest of this sucks.
Now, see, I just want to say,
I hope none of the members of the American breed are offended by that. But come on, guys, how many people even know what the fuck I'm talking about? But you might. You remember Bend Me, Shake Me?
Sure, of course. Remember the song.
I like. Right, only that one. And I had the album. And it bugs me to this day. My point is, like, every song was a winner.
Right.
You know, that. There are some songs like that. The Beatles did it.
Of course. Well,
but not always. There's some shitty Beatles songs.
But. You know, that's like seeing, getting obsessed with the birthmark on the beautiful woman that's Miss America or whatever.
That is exactly what I would do.
Yeah.
In a bad way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You just,
but,
you know, music producers, I'm sure film, same thing. You music producer, oh, hear that? Oh, my God. You know, and here's this magnificent thing and one little, and oh, we got to do it over. Because, in the old days, you just go, are you kidding? Just leave it.
You know, I often thought you could put out an album called The Worst of the Beatles and it would go to number one. And you could pick like...
Bill, you are opinionated. You know that?
You could pick like and I'm the biggest Beatle fan in the world. But,
me too.
Yeah, but there are... I don't like Love Me Do.
I appreciate it. It's like...
It is different.
But it was not going to make a career
playlist.
On its own. It sort of got reversed.
They were children when
they got pulled along because of what happened later.
I mean, just the lyrics are embarrassing because you're a child. I don't want to listen to children's music, especially when they made 250 better songs. But
you would probably say that about Do You Want to Know a Secret?
No, that, I mean, that's not the greatest, but I love George's accent, and it's, I mean, it's just, there's something charming.
You know, the thing that you were, you almost said, though, I don't think you could make a 12-song LP out of bad Beatles songs. I don't think there's that many.
Oh, I do. 12, yeah. 12 that I really don't, I don't need to hear Honey Don't. I love Ringo.
Oh, my God.
Really?
Well, Honey Don't is George.
No, that's Ringo.
No, that's George.
Want to bet?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll punch,
I've always thought it
I'll
was...
I'll punch you in the dick if I'm right, and you get to...
You're probably right. It's just that I stood next to George doing that song.
I could be
and
wrong.
And I kind of went, oh, is that George?
Anyway, whoever it is, it's not them. It's not their fault. I just don't like the song.
Yeah, oh, I and, see, that and, was one of
I
the
mean,
top ones
The Beatles
for me.
Did 18... Top Honey Don't?
Yep.
Oh, Honey Don't.
When they... Well, they, you probably don't know this, but... Carl Perkins played that song and
yeah,
wrote
they
it. The other side of Blue Suede Shoes.
So what? I mean, I'm
oh,
not...
Oh, no, no, well...
I'm not that... I mean, Blue Suede Shoes is another one where, okay, it's a little better than a few
Do
of these.
Do you know the song Mystery Train by Elvis?
I certainly know of it, and I'm sure I've heard it, but I can't recall it. But
okay.
I think it's probably one of the... If I don't know it, means... And I'm a huge Elvis fan. Huge.
Right.
Huge. If it's not... If I don't know it, it means I heard it because I tried to get everything he ever did,
yeah.
And I did not put it in my iPod in my collection.
Unfortunately, they remastered, reprocessed Elvis's early stuff, and it existed that way from 1970 or so. Actually, I'm going to say it was 69 until somewhere in the late 80s, RCA went,
look
oops.
This. Look over there. Who's that?
There you go, yeah.
That's, well, that's from an album.
That's Elvis from Vegas.
A lot of these, yeah, a lot of these things around this room I saved from when I was a kid when they came in LPs. This one, look at Prince.
Was that a poster in an LP?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And you, I don't think you guys ever put a poster in an album.
Not a poster.
And it's been burning me up ever since. That's why I wanted you over here so I could finally get you in this chair and say, fuck you, John Fogerty, for not giving me a poster.
Well, of course, it wasn't my call.
I'm fucking with you.
You know, it's like the guy with the cigar. Well, I own all your songs, and I'm not going to give you a poster either. I said, okay.
Well, I wasn't going
to Speaking of that guy. I'll just say that, you know, I had to sit and listen to certain platitudes of wisdom from an older person in the record biz who owned the label that Creedence was on. But I did go in once, and I said, you know, they're starting, it was at this time around 1969, they were starting to promote, it was before KTEL Records, if you've ever heard of that.
Of course.
Okay. It was before that, and they were selling like polka records, things like that, on TV.
Okay.
There was, you know, somebody, right. And you also get, roll out the barrel, you know, and
Lawrence
the idea
Welk.
Struck yeah. me. I said, wow, they're advertising music on TV. I said, you know, that would be a great thing. And I went in and had a meeting with the owner of Fantasy, and I said, you know, explained it just what I said to you. Said, I think it would be great if you, you know, advertised Creedence on television. Maybe had some kind of special or something where you get, I probably said, where you get two albums for the price of one and a half or something if you do it on. And he said, people who watch television don't buy records.
Yes, we do.
I just looked at him. I went,
say we do.
What?
Right.
Oh, boy, that was the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Especially since in that era, 100% of people watched television. So I'm guessing...
And there were only three channels, so...
I'm guessing a segment of that also listened to music.
Yes.
But you brought this up, but I've always been curious about this. You know, Ted Williams.
Yeah.
You do know him?
Didn't know him,
okay,
but...
All right.
Gee.
But, you know, could have held every record in baseball, but he went into the service for World War II, lost, like, his best 4 years.
Right.
Height of it. Went into the service again for Korea.
Korea, right.
I mean, wow, that kind of patriotism, I don't
By the way, he didn't watch television.
Who?
He thought Ted Williams. He said, I need my eyes. That will hurt my eyes.
Wow. They used to say he could, on a fastball, he could read the label.
Probably.
On the baseball, the Rawlings label.
406 in...
Yes, 1940. 40. Last person to hit 41. Last person to hit 400, and he did it on the last day of the season. He was at 400, and he could have sat.
It was, I think it was 399, actually.
No.
You're right. He could have.
Because he could have just sat.
No, I think they were going to round it out. I think that was the story.
No,
it would technically or
no,
400.
No. He had either 400 or 401. In other words, the point is he had the record. All he had to do was sit.
Yep.
And he said, no, that's not the way I roll. Doubleheader went 6 for 8.
Yep.
And that's why. So, my reason I bring this up out of the blue is, you know, like I always think of him when I think of you, because I thought, wow, he gave up a lot of his good years.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. Yeah.
Nothing pisses me off more than single-use plastic bottles. Well, not nothing, but ignoring the environment is way up there on my list of dumb things we are doing to wreck the planet. That's where Liquid Death comes in. Liquid Death may look like a beer or some bro-inspired energy drink that you pound down before your 10-minute cold plunge, but in reality, it's a healthy beverage brand. Why would someone call a healthy beverage Liquid Death? Because their mission is to bring death to single-use plastic bottles with their infinitely recyclable aluminum cans. Liquid Death donates a portion of profits to eliminating the use of plastic. If plastic pollution isn't curbed, there will be more plastic than fish in the ocean by 2050. You can get free shipping of Liquid Death's Mountain Water, flavored sparkling and iced tea 8-packs with Amazon Prime, or grab a can or a case at your local 7-Eleven, Target, Walmart, Whole Foods, or on Instacart. Go to liquiddeath.com/random to check out all their healthy, infinitely recyclable beverages and find your closest retailer. That's liquiddeath.com/random. Once more, liquiddeath.com/random. Thank you to Liquid Death for your support. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and you can heat and eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. And discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. If you're looking for gourmet meals, Factor features premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/random50 and use code RANDOM50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code RANDOM50 at factormeals.com/random50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Okay, I'll be at the Arizona Financial Theater May 4th in Phoenix, Arizona. May 18th, the Borgata, my old place at the Borgata. May 18th, that's down in Atlantic City. And May 19th at the Palace Theater in Albany, New York. I never really understood the business machinations of it, and I'm sure it's boring to you at this point, so I don't want to go into that. But when did it end?
When I met my beautiful wife, Julie.
That's not when the business part of it ended.
The part that mattered ended probably the moment I laid eyes on her, actually.
Wow.
It was literally, I actually, you know, and I've only said this once in my life. That's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. And I was like, and I may have said it out loud, right? She was across the room and all that. And I just.
Wow. You just.
I think God does that. You know, there's a internal or a heavenly telegraph, a telepathy or whatever that you, in other words, that was the code for me, that this is the one for that's meant for you, John. Hmm. And so I stood there like and so she walked up to me because a couple of her friends or she had dared them. Hey, that's John Fogerty. I'm going to go shake his hand. But I was on the other end just being a guy. I wasn't John Fogerty.
Where was this event taking place?
It was in Indianapolis after I had done a show there. Okay. And it was in a little club around the corner from the hotel I was staying in. And the club was called Don't Ask.
Oh, yeah, it was around the corner from Don't Tell?
Yeah.
Yeah, great place. So I got to say, you just wetted panties all over this country because, like, the idea of a man fielding a question about his business life with the answer, doesn't matter, I met the most beautiful girl in the world. That is going to cause orgasms somewhere. Someone's going to send this to somebody and say, you think there's no good men left? Well, here's an 80-year-old.
Well, the point
being, what year was this?
That was 1986.
Yep. So right after center
September
field.
September 14th, if I remember correctly.
I'm sure you do. Yeah. Because you'd be in hot water if you didn't. Wow. That's very romantic.
Okay,
you're an ultimate romantic.
She allowed me to be. That's absolutely, I'm not sure what I was before then. I'd, read a couple of books and seen some cool movies in my life. And she allowed me to be that guy you just said. And I became that guy 100%, 110%, flowers and all that kind of stuff.
Still.
Never failing to say, and which is how I feel in my heart, honey, you look beautiful.
That is so
or,
beautiful.
I love you. And I even tell her that. You let me be that romantic guy. Okay, so there, in a lot of ways in business, I got F, right? But the point is, I ended up with the golden ticket.
But you're okay with, looking back, you're okay with how you handled it. You have no regrets.
Oh, I remember hearing what Sinatra or somebody saying, oh man, I wouldn't change a thing. Are you kidding? I'd change everything.
I always say the same thing.
Oh,
people
God.
Who go, no regrets. I'm like, I have regrets every single day. It's almost what it basically means to be a human, is that you're always moving forward, which is the dark because we haven't been there yet. Behind you is lit because you've seen it.
Right.
So of course it's full of regrets. Now, as you get older and wiser, you do get wiser kids, the regrets become fewer because you've seen more, because the dark is somewhat less dark.
Well, sure, and you also don't step out into the elevator shaft that doesn't have a car in it.
Right.
You look and, because you're older, you're kind of a little more wary about
when
things.
I think of some of the things I did that could have killed me, I remember we got this stuff that I see now.
Did you just say I did some stuff that could have killed me?
Totally.
Yeah.
I remember we
got
this stuff. We did every drug that came along that was, I see now, looking back, it was poppers, what it became very big in the gay community. It was amyl nitrate. But we got it in this form.
Don't they give that to leopards when they're trying to?
It looked like this. It looked exactly like this. And you take the top off and go.
Careful.
And yeah, but this isn't it. And you would turn beet red and laugh hysterically for 2 minutes and then it was over. Obviously, it was something really bad for you. And like, what if I had a brain fart because we were all so stoned and drank it? I'd be dead. Shit like that. You know, that's why I like being older, because the pain from the stupidity was almost too much and could have killed you. Anyway. Bad moon rising. So
I just wanted to reemphasize that point, that even though I got effed, right, in a lot of ways and a lot of years.
What are you, a Christian? You can't say fuck?
If I'm going to use my chip, I'm going to use it in the best place I can use it.
That's so old school. I kind of love that. You're right. It is overused. You're right.
The fact that I found this gigantic gold nugget that everyone else is looking for, and here I was, shipwrecked dude on the beach with, you know, no shoes and his pants ripped up to here. I'm stumbling along and found the gold nugget.
Wait, what are we talking about?
My wife.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right.
And I realized it.
You lost me on the island with the pants.
The point being, I knew it. I knew what that meant. And
but you knew it
as I started to tell her, probably a week into it or something like that, said, you know, honey, meeting you and one day with you is worth the 20 years in hell.
Holy shit.
And that's the truth.
That is just such a beautiful story.
Yeah, but what's important in life is all that stuff you're going to smoke up or eat up or throw away worth losing the love of your life? Of course not.
It's such a profound point, and it's something that has been a theme in my life ever since I was – I'm serious, because when I was – 17 years old, I had my first girlfriend. I was very shy. So, when I was like masturbating furiously, and a couple of girls they liked me. I knew I was so shy, I couldn't move on it. Very tragic. Anyway, so when I finally got a girlfriend when I was 16, and then she dumped me when I was 17, it was so devastating that I remember thinking at the time and ever since, where do you put your eggs in life? Do you put it in love or do you put it in career? And I think because of that, elementary moment in my life and the pain that it caused at 17, I always put it in, career. I can control that. Another person, I can't control. They could leave me, they could die, I could change, they could change. But career, I can control that. I just signed a new deal with HBO. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Right.
No, but I really think that is the fulcrum that is so important to so many people's decision-making in life. Where do you put that energy? Do you put it in love or do you put it in your career? Because Freud said it. He said, there's work and love. That's pretty much all there.
No, he said that.
Yeah.
What did he do?
He got fucking jaw cancer and died. But other than that, he's the father of psychology. I'm very skeptical about psychiatrists. I don't know how you feel about psychiatrists, but
Julie was my psychiatrist.
Holy shit. Boy, did I walk into that one. Here, do a
few. No. But the point being, I did go to a couple of shrinks, one of them actually on the advice of Julie, right? And I will.
Oh, she wasn't your shrink.
No, not
really. You mean like in an off book?
No, really went and met with a doctor guy, in a room. And,
isn't a wonderful woman who loves you and understands you the best shrink there is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's my point. But
right. Down on the corner.
Huh? There's another weird thing you said, and I do want to address that because I, also in this day and age, this world we live in these days with all this stuff on the phone and everything. I'm just so glad I'm not out there trying to find somebody. It's just scary. You know, Julie and I look at each other that way. Oh my God. But you did say something about 20-year-olds.
It is scary.
And I wanted to address that.
But I must say, among 80-year-olds, I feel like you could do almost at the very top of the percentile among 80-year-olds. I'm saying if women of almost any age had to pick among 80-year-olds, I feel like you would do very well. I mean, come on. Look, I just
you
do.
You want me to be ridiculous?
I'm not kidding.
You know, not only is she going to say, what do you mean Sinatra? Who's that? Who's the Beatles? Who's Elvis? Who's Creedence? Who's Madonna? That 20-year-old going to say, I like Billie Eilish.
May I rebut that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, first of all, there's the butt. 20-year-olds have great butts. Now, here's my rebuttal to that, which is, one, first of all, I like to learn about Billie Eilish, and that's the only way you can, is by actually talking to somebody that age, and I don't have kids.
Yeah.
So, okay. Secondly, there's ignorance and stupidity are two very different things. Stupidity means you can't learn because you're fucking stupid. Ignorance means you just don't know something. But somebody who is very smart and wants to learn, then it can be kind of a joy if you get the opportunity to watch Casablanca together for the first time. you know.
I'm agreeing that. With you because I've got one of those too. She's 22.
Right.
She's at NYU. She's my daughter, okay. Kelsey.
All right. Well,
and from and the time she was probably 8 or 9 and well, loving music, I got to,
right.
I did this with all my kids. I even used the phrase, I get to see the world through their eyes.
I do too. I just didn't have them as children.
Right. Well, yes, it has, Bill. Doggone it. Oh, boom. I have some friends who have that formula, and it gosh.
What formula? What
that formula no, of dating people that are 40 years younger than you.
I don't. Well, I never saw it as a formula, but now that you mentioned it. You know what? People use the term appropriate relationship all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's an appropriate relationship, one that works.
Sure.
If yours works for you, great. If mine works for me, I don't expect or think I should have to abide by any judgment. We all are attracted to who we're attracted to, and I could find fault with almost any types of pairings. So whatever works. I mean, we certainly think that nowadays with cross-sexual relationship. I mean, we're certainly past the age where we think gay is any different or worse or no, or more abnormal.
Right.
It's just different, and so with trans. And I say, great, go whoever,
go girl, go boy, go they.
But that should apply to me too, or anybody. For we're not talking about children, but you know, people of different ages. And again, why is it okay when Kate Beckinsale does it? Why is it okay when Madonna do it?
Cher?
Yes,
you mean like
Cher.
Yeah.
If it works, it's appropriate.
Yep. Yeah, and also, everybody's, you know, may have different goals, and that's okay too.
Right. And let's be honest, the orthodox model is more often a failure than not. I mean, you're one of the lucky ones. You met someone many years ago. You remain steadily in love and obviously attracted. I mean, that's a great story. It's not the usual story. It's just not.
There. So
how many
you didn't ask this question, but we were talking, mom and dad, meaning my wife and I, a couple of days, a little while ago. And she said something about rock star or something. And I said, you know, I wanted to be a rock star. I certainly wanted to be a great musician in, you know, rock and roll. But I didn't want to live rock star life, whatever that means. There's a few people we could probably think of that have very long and glittering careers that way, meaning I certainly was around all the drugs and drinking and all the rest. I'm not going to say I never did any of that. I'm just saying that it how my brain worked, it didn't seem like a long-term discipline.
Right.
You know, it just bothered me. Now, you know, I had a lot of trouble with alcohol for many years.
You're very wise. I mean, you know,
I learned the hard way.
Well, you saw where it was going, probably because in your generation of stars, like we lost that famous thing about age 27, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, who were some of the,
I think Robert Johnson, matter of fact. The old blues guy.
Oh, really? Was 27?
Yeah.
From heroin?
He was poisoned.
Poisoned?
Messing around with some guy's wife or woman.
You sure it wasn't?
Yeah, that's a famous story. In Greenwood, in Three Forks, Mississippi. Yeah, but he was famous for womanizing, but he was a kid. Yeah, but he was part of the 27 Club.
Yeah, and there was, Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
Hendrix, Joplin. I mean, those are like three of the giants.
Kurt Cobain, I guess.
Kurt Cobain, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was almost like the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly plane crash, except they weren't all on the same plane. They were all doing the same.
That year, it was 70, I guess.
Yeah, it was like, that probably had an effect on you. How could you have not seen that? Those were your peers at the very moment you were peaking.
Every place you'd go, you know, you'd be backstage at the Fillmore I mean, I was young, and I know. Also, I was competitive about my band. I was trying to keep my band relevant, you know, powerful.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Which
and
is
these
what
people would come through back, say, hey, man, I got a handful of, and these are yellows or greenies or, you know, and I didn't know what, I would look at the hand and I go, how the hell do I know where that came from? Could have been, you know,
well,
made
he said
in
it
a
was
toilet
yellow.
Somewhere, right? Well, I mean, I wasn't going to take it. I wanted to go out and do a good performance, right?
That's hysterical. Hey,
see, that's something else that's wrong with me. It was that. It was that,
no,
that not
great.
Wanting, it wasn't about me getting to have a, you know, go on vacation, in other words. I wanted to be a musician, and I was trying hard as I could just to rise to a certain level. And the fact, I mean, I knew drinking made you drunk, and I knew that smoking pot made you altered, and I wouldn't probably be able to remember the chords or words to the song. Therefore, I would be bad.
Right.
And I sure didn't want that, right?
No, don't want that.
It was a competitive thing.
Very competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, and you guys were, like, beyond the songwriting, which, let's be honest, is 90% of it. But it was a tight little band.
Yep.
Like when you did
for
that—
For a time.
Like, I have this song of yours, which has been the number one song on the top of my playlist because it's 11 minutes long. So like if you're like waiting for people to, you know, it then it's, but it's always been one of my favorites, your cover of Heard It Through the Grapevine, mm-hmm. which like really highlights that. I mean, to go through 11 minutes and not be boring, you know, it's just a great jam.
Thank you.
Because that's not an 11 minute song.
No, that was my point about the jamming.
Well, why,
thing. Jamming
why,
was a, you know, became a big deal. And
why
was,
did you do that? Why did you do an 11 minute version of that?
Well, you know, obviously started out that way. Susie Q was a jam, but it was organized. You know, it wasn't just, oh, I'm waiting for you to have an idea. Oh, I was waiting for you to have, you know, and everybody's going plong, 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 but nobody's really playing anything, right? Yeah, I sure didn't want to do that, and I did not want to be in a
but,
band
I mean,
that
just,
did that.
I'm just saying, it always struck me as an odd choice, as much as I love it, because it had already been a hit.
Oh, that song.
It had already been a hit for Gladys Knight.
Yep.
Then it was a giant hit for Marvin Gaye.
Yep.
Okay, in 1968. That was my first year listening. Okay, that was like when that was like right at the time when that was at the top of the charts. Hey Jude was probably the next big number one hit. 1968. But so to cover it a third time for 11 minutes, and yet you did. I mean, you did something to it that I'm still playing it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great fucking...
Wow, you're right about that.
It's a great fucking jam song, and it never gets boring for 11 minutes. It's really good.
Well, there's stuff being played, stuff happening to you know, there's a new scene. There's a new actor comes into the focus or something, you know, stuff.
But did you ever do another cover at all?
After that, I don't know.
I don't think so.
A few covers. I covered.
It wasn't the era.
Oobie Doobie. I covered My Baby Left Me by Elvis.
Oh, you did? I never. Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
That's also that. On. Those are on Cosmos Factory. Both of them.
Yeah. See, I don't remember those because My Baby Left Me.
Yes, my baby.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
Yeah.
Just not one of my, I mean, that was an Elvis song?
Yep. That was the other, that was actually a defining moment in my life, hearing the Elvis one. I was my family was up in this place called Winters, California, Northern California, near where the Poudre Creek is, which is the little creek. Little river that I named Green River and made a song about all of that life, right? And I'm in this thing that was kind of a general store. I'm about 10 years old, and there's a jukebox, believe it or not. You know, it's like a grocery store that has fishing bait and poles and maybe a, you know, various stuff. And suddenly this song starts playing, and what? And there's a jukebox, and I'm hearing this incredible guitar thing and some guy going, yeah, my baby love me, you know, and I'm, wow. And I didn't know what it was. So I ran over and, you know, and I'm finally looking, okay, okay, it's A11 or whatever. And I look on the thing and it says, Elvis Presley, My Baby Left Me. And I went, oh, it's Elvis. And I finally figured out it's the other side of I Want You, I Need You, I Love You, which was Elvis's second big song after Heartbreak Hotel.
Right.
And I was, I just stood there hypnotized, transfixed. I don't know what that is, but that's what I want to do. And I made up my mind right then, which is, that's why I covered it.
See, I like Elvis's starter hit, which is Heartbreak Hotel. Yep. At least that was the first one on RCA. He did record for 2 years before that on Sun Records.
Right.
But I don't think
were they even released
nationally? I mean, we have them now as archival. But the first big hit, he went to RCA, released Heartbreak Hotel, January 1956, the year I was born. And that was like, I like Heartbreak Hotel. There is something timeless about that one. That's kind of an amazing record. Then You Lose Me. I mean, I Want You, I Need You, I Love You, all that. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I didn't get back to Elvis.
But
I mean,
the third one was Hound Dog. And hate Don't
that,
Be Cruel.
Hate that.
Oh, my God, really?
Don't Be Cruel. Yes, that 50s shit, I'm sorry. It's just not for me. It's all Love Me Do shit.
Well, because you didn't experience it when it happened?
No, because it sucks. Because it's not sophisticated. I experience it now. I think Jailhouse Rock, which was 1957, that's a good hit. I mean, that's a much more sophisticated, it's just a better song. And then
that's Lieber and Stoller.
I mean, yes, it is. Exactly. That's probably why. Return to Sender in 1962.
You like that one?
Yes, I like that one. But most of them were just travelogue songs from his stupid movies. Then you get...
Oh, wait, that's a whole nother... Sure. Go. Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Well, then
sure.
You get to 1969. He's your year, again, the year of Creedence and all this great stuff. And we have Suspicious Minds. He tells Colonel Parker, I'm tired of the travelogue movies. I want to go back to touring, Vegas, and, you know, the jumpsuits, that look.
Yeah.
And then you get great music for about another 5 years, I think. That's my favorite Elvis period. Yes, when he was a grown-ass man, and he demanded grown-ass music, and he did some great fucking tracks that people... I was talking to Sheryl Crow, was here recently, talking about Any Day Now, Burt Bacharach song. It's on From Memphis to Vegas, one of his great double albums, Elvis. You know, both places he was working at the time. Uh-huh. And that was great stuff. I would love to sit with you and just listen to my iPod on shuffle, see what comes up. Over 40 something years of
Elvis?
No, not just Elvis, of everybody.
Oh.
Like everything I've ever liked. That's why I like the old iPod, because I can just make the playlist, you know, not even playlist, shuffle. Just put it on shuffle of like all the songs I've collected from 1968 to now. Because, you know, Frank Sinatra would come on, and then next thing would be Talking Heads.
You're talking about the musical experience of your lifetime.
Exactly. It's Bill Maher Radio.
There you go.
But I bet you would like a lot of them, or maybe some of them you would go, what the fuck is that?
I think that's just a description of your life, you know, the time period that you live in and experience.
Well, you added a lot to it. For something in a super competitive business, you know, where, you know, I mean, not to, again.
Well, I like some of the things
American
I did.
Breed, bend me, shake me.
Yeah,
I mean, they did it once, but, you know, you did it a lot. And not that we're trying to, like, shit on the American Breed tonight. Yeah. Not at all. They did a very fine record. But I'm just saying.
I'm amazed you remember that that's the name of that band. Wow.
Because I have the whole album, and I spent $4.99.
Oh, well, you see, to a kid, that's, what a disappointment.
It probably cost me $3.99 for crying out loud for one.
Plus 14 cents tax.
Yeah, for one song, for God's sakes.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I love music, loved music, and the really great things.
Still on tour. You're still on tour, right?
Yeah, going out there all the time. This summer, I'm playing a lot of shows, touring with George Thorogood.
Wow.
So we're going to have
a lot of fun. Bill.
Yeah. Wow. I've known George for many years.
So you do it
this is the first time we're actually touring together.
So you're doing this is the summer?
Yep.
The summer, man. Is there anything like the summer rock
tour? Oh, it's great.
You know, Kid Rock has that song about, you know, with the girl on your shoulders in the second row. I mean, there is something about that experience, especially outside.
Also, I've often wondered, boy, you pass through a thing. You do something at Woodstock and you're 24.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, and maybe by the time you're 30, you go, I wish I hadn't done that.
What was Woodstock right? like?
But then by the time you're 60, you're going, hot damn.
Yes.
I'm really glad I did that.
You should be.
Yeah.
You were at Woodstock.
Yeah,
right?
It was.
What day?
The middle day, Saturday.
So it started on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Who played on Friday? You remember?
I only heard about
it. Sha Na Na was there too.
Were they?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know who was on the Friday.
Who was on your day?
I've only reconstructed it later. And later is the operative word here.
Well, you must know who you followed, because that's always in an artist's mind.
You had to ask that, didn't you?
Really? Because isn't that so important? It would be to a comic. Like, I would remember 40 years on. Like,
I remember 50, 60 years on, sure.
But, like, who you followed is to me, would be the big question. You don't
so
remember?
So, I had agreed to do this show after seeing a bunch of billboards up and down the East Coast, probably about March, April of 69. You know, that thing we've all seen with the guitar,
yes.
Actually a bass. There's a little birdie sitting
on it. There's a bird on it. Yes.
3 days of peace, love, and
yes.
Something.
Sex in the mud.
Yeah, probably. and so they called me and I said, all right, but you got to give us the prime spot on. We want you to be on Saturday. Okay, but it's got to be the prime spot. That would be 8 o'clock or possibly 9 o'clock.
So you went
John.
You went on at 3 a.m.
Yep.
Really?
So we get there by a World War II helicopter, which can only take two of the band at a time. You know?
Really?
Land in this thing in the afternoon. I mean, you come up over a hill, you know, you're in this little thing that's shaking.
Right.
Like it's gonna, and then you see the biggest crowd of people you've ever seen in your, I mean, you didn't even know there was that many, you know, it was like out of the Bible.
You'd only take one guy. Who'd you
take? Two of us from the band,
right.
Plus the guy flying.
So you could take one guy with you.
Yep.
Who was it? I bet not.
I can't remember. I think Doug was sitting with me, but I can't remember
I
for sure.
I bet it wasn't the drummer. No, I'm fucking.
That was the drummer.
Kidding.
And then I actually went out and walked around in the crowd. You know, I had a little hat on and I think I had a scarf or something, and I remember somebody was selling, it was either a quart of water or a gallon for, I think it was a dollar. You know, I want to say $5, but it was probably, and I was just upset that people are selling water. It's like a staple, right?
Even
and I just, yeah. Well, sure. If you remember, or if you've read about Woods, they ran out of food and they ran out of water. And there was a dire.
Right.
I'm looking at all these people. I didn't know half a million. I just knew it was the biggest crowd of
people. Didn't run
and
out
I
of,
thought,
they didn't,
if they stampede, if something goes bad here.
Stampede, no.
A lot of people are going to die.
They looked happy. They ran out of food. They ran out of water. They did not run out of cum or mud or acid.
True.
And
you but the, named the movie
right.
that followed.
I mean, the. But what's interesting is, if you've ever seen the documentary, and if you haven't, I recommend it highly, on the 1999 Woodstock, because they did a
tour. I've heard about it.
It's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie's good. The situation was not.
Right.
I mean, what people had become was just curdled. I mean, people were much more materialistic, rapey, misogynistic. We were supposed to have advanced, not in 1999.
See, and you weren't even a hippie in the 60s with all those things, you know, you came later.
No, I was 13. So I was just that kid at the, you know, with my nose pressed up against the window thinking, wow, I wish I was old enough to go to Woodstock and see CCR like I did at Shea Stadium.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that would be the next year when I said
yeah.
But
see, but you're saying there's a little bit of ownership there. You're saying that in 99... God, all these people didn't get better. They got worse.
They got worse. Yeah. They did. I mean, it was more commercial. I mean, when you look at that documentary, it's ugly. It's ugly that the kind of like, you know, masochistic bro kind of vibe that was in the audience.
Well, the audience kind of, and the bands, I heard.
And the bands,
were, you know, they
was,
were trying
it was
to,
the age of metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a lot of that. And,
see, but,
it,
what
but
you're
I don't
doing,
blame the bands.
If, you had, if that scene or the movie you're talking about was about Attica or something, you know, St. Quentin, you would have been okay with it. But the touchstone being, here's Woodstock in 69 with Peace and Love and all that, and then here's Woodstock again.
Well,
and it's like, ah!
John, I think some of the people in Attica are there for a reason. The kids at Woodstock were just going for a concert. I mean,
but
Attica.
You're comparing them to... That's all. That was the point I was making. This Woodstock is not like that Woodstock.
Right, but neither one is in a prison. It's really, I think.
Well, I just meant a place that you would expect bad stuff.
I know, but yeah. That's a place where there's a reason we expect bad stuff, because it's where they sent the criminals.
Yeah. I mean, the it's remarkable that Woodstock of 69 was as peaceful as, you know, those kids put up with a lot of...
It is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, they ran, you know, mud. No protection from the elements. Ran out of food. They actually had the airdrop.
And what about bathroom issues?
All that stuff.
That, to me, maybe...
I didn't experience that. I was sort of in that afternoon, left.
But I know...
Early in the morning, you know.
I'm just saying, like, bathroom issues, to me, would be the worst of it. Like, I could go 4 days without food. I do fasts.
Yeah.
But not having a place to go, or having maybe the residue of people going somewhere where I was...
I don't even know. What was the story on that? Was there not enough porta potties?
I'm sure there were not. Would we guess that they
500,000 people?
And it would... No, I just think it was bad. But... Anyway, that's really, I'm sure, not the memory of Woodstock we all want to have. But
what was your memory?
So you don't remember who you followed?
Oh, of course I do.
Oh, I asked you that.
Yeah.
Who?
The Grateful Dead.
The Grateful Dead. Never liked them.
They were
never my kind of band. I'm sorry. I'm sure they're
great.
I
was kind of, what's the word? There was a natural... You know, here's what's funny.
I'm sure you killed.
Politically and philosophically, I'm absolutely in the same place as the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, but the music is different.
I didn't imbibing the drugs at the same time as the music like they did.
Well,
and that kind of bothered me a little bit. I thought it affected the music.
Well, you know the old joke about the Grateful Dead, don't you? Like, what did the Grateful Dead fans say when the acid wore off?
Moved off, yeah.
This band sucks.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure they're great. Look, like I said, you can't argue with people about music. You either like it or you don't. I'm sure they're great, but they're a jam band. That's not my thing.
Sure.
I remember, if
the right...
Traveling Band. 2 minutes and 1 second.
James Brown, man. Get out of here.
2 minutes, yeah. Proud Mary, 3 minutes on the dot.
Yeah.
It was like the Nazis
I think it's 3:19.
Really? Yeah. I thought it was, okay. Maybe I'm thinking of Honky Tonk Woman, 3 minutes. But like, it was all like the Nazis were in the control room. Like, we will make this record, you know.
Oh, that was, you know, if he went, if you did that 3 times, out of here. Forget it.
But I love
that. I mean, it's just like, you know.
Yeah, Beatles too. Like, just get to it,
right.
You know. I mean, that's another reason, I talk about this all the time, I'm sure people think I'm nuts, but another reason why I love the old iPod, because you can edit songs on the computer.
Oh.
Because the songs are on your computer, then you load them into the old iPod. That takes like, 30 seconds, so God, we can't have that. Rather have streaming where I don't get what I want. But you can cut off, you can edit. Yes, nobody knows this. I'm trying to get the word out. You can edit. You can get rid of the beginning or the end. You can't do the middle. But you can cut off. People have like phone messages on the beginning of their stupid songs, you know.
Well, you just like fade it in.
No, you just go to options and it says, where do you want to start the song? You want to start that you play it? Oh, I see. At second 45, it gets to be the song. I can cut off the other bullshit. Or sometimes people are talking at the beginning of their song. There's clapping at the end for 30 seconds. I can cut all that off. Wow. The beginning or the end.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Fuck yeah, man.
You can be your own DJ.
Not a DJ, editor.
Okay.
Even better.
See what you've hit the nail on the head. I think, how can I say it? A record is a presentation.
It is.
That's the
Thank
not
you.
The same as a jam.
I mean, like,
right?
Not to always go back to the Beatles, but like
they
I
were,
said,
they were great.
They were
absolutely.
Of course, they're the patriarchs. Yep. Okay. Like, even songs that like I've said this many times, they're not, they have some great lyrics and some are just silly because the music is so great.
Right.
So I bet you we both know Hello Goodbye, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The lyrics are nothing. They're just really just Hello Goodbye. That's the whole song. But how does it start? Let's do it on, I'll say 1, 2, 3, and then we'll start. 1, 2, 3. You say yes.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
I say no.
Ding, ding,
we're
ding.
Into it already.
Yeah.
Okay. No bullshit. We're into this really good melodic song that means nothing, but we don't care because the song is so good. You know, I'd rather have both, but I'd always take the song. I mean, I still listen to Hello Goodbye. It's still a great song. I think I've gotten the message. Hello Goodbye.
But don't you appreciate, especially with the Beatles, they understood entertainment.
Totally.
They were capable of writing heavy songs, but they didn't just, everything's important. It's so important every day.
And when they wrote one about how important things were, it's one of their greatest revolution.
Yeah.
Still, what an amazing record. Just as a, you know, right. It just you kills you, right?
Yeah, when you go carrying signs of Chairman Mao, right. This is a different world we live in, but I was out on tour in 86 when a Nike ad came on TV using Revolution.
Oh.
That I was staying in a Holiday Inn. The trash can in my room went all the way across the room. And missed the TV by about that. I was so pissed off. Beatles in a commercial. No, no. Oh, God, I was angry about
that. Not their fault.
That.
Not their fault. They didn't do that.
No.
Michael Jackson did that.
Is that right?
Of course.
Is that where that came from?
You remember that. He bought.
Yeah.
They.
Yeah, Paul advised him to do it, so he did.
Well.
I didn't say my songs, mate.
I mean, they should have been watching the store better, but they talk about getting fucked over. They did too.
Yep.
Not like you, not on that level. They were always able to record, but they, you know, everybody.
A lot of their songs were owned, but, you know, Northern, I think it was Brian Epstein and some attorney, I've forgotten.
There's two things I know about the music industry, and they are somewhat related because they both use the word fuck. Everybody gets fucked financially. If they can, you have to fight for what you.
Yep, sure do.
Okay. And two, this is something someone I know who was in the music industry, an attractive woman, said to me once. She said, I've never known any man in the industry who has not tried to fuck me. Some of them do it more elegantly. Some of them are rapists, but they will fuck you financially and they will try to fuck you sexually.
Oh, you're talking about a woman said this.
Yes, a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I'm sure it happens to men too.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, and I don't want to cause trouble. Of course I do. I'm Bill Maher. But like the Me Too movement went through, you know, movies, went through television, went through finance, went through Garrison Keillor and the Senate, Al Franken. And boy, the music industry, the epicenter of it, I mean, you saw they raided Diddy's house. I don't know what's going on there, but
we don't know yet.
No, we don't know. But I'm just saying, the music industry. Are you kidding me? Too.
That's
people,
the Wild West.
It's the epicenter of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you fucking left it alone because we all love music so much. The only reason I can think of is that
when I was young, I thought that there was some kind of structure to all the things. In entertainment, that, you know, and that you get to this level and click, you know, kind of like the military. You become a second lieutenant, and then you become a, I don't know, a major, or then a colonel. I mean, I thought there was some sort of, I'm saying in a weird way, but a structure that everyone followed.
Show business?
I was a kid. It seemed to be what I saw from looking at records and watching TV.
Well, there were gatekeepers. There were gatekeepers, which there are not now so much.
I suppose.
In other words, you had to be signed to a record company.
That was probably your only way through to the... Eventually, it was
How
your only
you
way
through.
How did you
get signed? Originally?
By knocking on the door.
You, personally?
Yes.
Of who?
I was 19. I knocked on the door of Fantasy Records.
You did?
Yeah. I had seen that
Where were they?
About the only label in the Bay Area.
They're in the Bay Area.
Yeah. I had seen a TV program with three parts.
Your brother didn't do that?
No, I did it. I went over and knocked on the door and walked in and started talking to a man named Max Weiss. There was this thing about the song, Vince Guaraldi, Cast Your Bait to the Winds, and that was their one and only hit. They'd accidentally had a hit record that was on Top 40 radio. It was an instrumental piano song. Okay, and so this Ralph Gleason, who was a writer, jazz writer mostly in the Bay Area, had sort of overseen a little special about it called Anatomy of a Hit. And so finally, I made up my mind, I'm going to go over there and knock on their door. And I walked in. There's this guy, Max Weiss.
They were in San Francisco?
One of the owners of the label. But I had to, it's a telling story.
Well, I'm sorry,
I had to wait down here in the stairwell because there was another guy up at the top of the stairs talking to...
Where in San Francisco? I'm very curious.
It's on Treat Avenue.
Where's that near?
Huh?
Where's that near? I know San Francisco pretty well.
Below Market.
Yeah. Okay.
It's warehouse
right.
section.
I know the area, yeah.
So, anyway, up at the top of the stairs, this Max Weiss character, who is one of the guys I saw on the TV show, there's another guy talking to him, and the other guy, this guy's a songwriter or arranger or something. He's an older guy. I mean, I'm 19. He looks like he's 35 or something. Oh, yeah. Well, I got a song, you know, Johnny Mathis is covering my song that I did. And this guy, and he's going to do my song. He's telling all this to Max. And I'm 19. I'm looking up. What the fuck are you doing here? You know, and this little, that's exactly what I said to myself. I got up there. And, of course, Max called me Colonel or Bright Eyes, which he had just called that guy the same. And that began a very long and
did you have tortured, a demo?
Huh?
Did you have a demo with you?
I think I had some instrumentals.
You had to have something
on tape because this was an instrumental, their hit.
They were a
jazz label. You may remember they were the ones that made the colored LPs, yellow.
But you had
blue.
None of your famous songs yet?
Oh no. I was barely out of high school.
Then why did they sign you?
Oh, we kept knocking on the door.
This was only the first time.
It's really funny. The week I happened to walk in there that week, and I had a little tape that had, I think it was reel to reel, had maybe three or four rock and roll instrumental kind of songs, because their hit, the Vince Guaraldi song, was an instrumental. So that's what we took over there, right? I had grown up through high school with my little band, the Blue Velvets, mostly playing instrumentals, many of which I wrote, but a lot of covers, Duane Eddy, The Ventures. Anybody that played rock music instrumentally, I probably Honky Tonk by Bill Doggett, right? And The Ventures.
I don't know any of this shit.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this is like
Well, those are my founding fathers.
Yeah, this is your apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I don't care about that. Then you learned your craft, and then you created these masterpieces. And that's when me, the consumer, the guy who can't do anything musically but appreciates music, was able to like get so much pleasure for 55 years. I mean, I thought of it today, that I've been playing your stuff for 55 years. It's sobering that where did those years go? But it's also really interesting that like when you think about 1969 to 2024 and all of your stuff And this stuff of Bridge Over Troubled Water is still played, and lots of stuff from that era
is
still played.
That's a great song and a great
Lots of great songs.
Yeah.
But if you went back from 1969, what's 25 years before that? It's...
The war?
1914. Nobody in 1969 knew one song from 19...
Did you say 25 years or 45?
50, 55. The same as from 69 till now.
I'm
saying the songs from your era, including yours, are still played and still widely known today. Nobody knows anything or knew anything in 1969 from 1914. What was the song? Alexander's Ragtime Band?
You nailed it.
Okay. Oh, that's like in the history books. I don't know how it goes. Oh, let's do a cover of that.
The funny thing about that song, that's Irving Berlin,
Is that Irving Berlin?
Yes.
The guy lived
to be 100 years old.
Yeah, that. Wow, you're right. And that must have been one of the early ones.
Somewhere in the 70s, because my mom used to talk about some of these songwriters, right? One of which was Irving Berlin.
Right.
But there was a point in Irving's life, because of the way the copyright laws were in the old days, he lived long enough that that particular song went into the public domain.
Yes.
He didn't own his own song because of the laws of America.
Right.
I mean, that's a really weird anomaly of...
And Irving Berlin wrote, didn't he write God Bless America? Yes, I think so.
Yep.
Not this Rust Spangled Banner, that was Francis God Keep, but God Bless America. Did he write White Christmas? I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, just like the ones
Irving Berlin wrote White Christmas,
right.
Sitting on the beach in Santa Monica.
Exactly. And you know, I can sing the intro to the song, which is never done. One guy did it, Robert Goulet. Would you like to hear it? Because you're right, it was written here in California, about being in California during the... And nobody ever sings the intro. I'm going to treat you now, John Fogerty.
Please.
The sun is shining, the grass is green, the orange and palm trees sway. There's never been such a day in Beverly Hills, L.A. But it's December the 24th, and I am longing to be... Up north, I'm dreaming.
Oh my goodness!
Of a white Christmas, yeah, yeah, man.
I've been robbed. I've been cheated my whole life.
I'll send you it.
No, it's because we know I'm dreaming. You know, yeah. Blah, 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 and the snow's coming down.
But there was that intro. The exact kind of thing I'd cut off in my fucking iPod using the edit function. No, that one actually is good.
Well, it tells you a whole different thing that I never knew until much later in life.
No. I'm telling you, we got to listen to my shuffle together. Because
this is Bill Maher's iPod of the universe.
Well, it does encompass like 68 to today. You know, I mean, not that, look, I'm not going to lie. There's not as much from later years as early years, probably. But there's stuff in every decade. Every decade produces great music.
Good for you.
I've never been a fan of people who think that we need to government subsidize the arts. The arts will always out. I didn't need any government subsidy. You didn't need any government subsidy. The arts will always...
Maybe at some point.
Did you?
I never got it, but yeah.
You never got it, and you never needed it. The cream will rise to the top. And
that's
artists,
very sweet
artists cannot be suppressed.
You know, there was a point you made that it's important to me. You talked about learning your craft, you know, and I was talking about the... playing covers, like I'm talking about in 1958, 59, The Ventures, The Wailers, believe it or not, a band from Seattle or the Northwest. Dwayne Eddy was a big influence. These are all instrumental people. And learning that. And then, of course, I mean, I was paying attention to songs with words, obviously. By the way, when I was a little kid, about 3 and a half, one day my mom came home, brought me home from nursery school and sat me down, gave me one of those little yellow kid records, And she explained to me, well, first she played it. And one side was Oh, Susanna. The other side was Camp Town Races,
wow.
Right? I'm 3 and a half. And she explained to me that Stephen Foster wrote both of those songs. Now, I'm a little kid. I might have thought that I'm hearing Stephen Foster on this record. Why wouldn't I think that? But the important part was my mom had explained to me there's a songwriter that created those two songs, and his name is Stephen Foster.
I can hear Camp Town Races in some of your stuff.
Do you know that I still, when I'm wandering around the house, right, the dog is over there and needs to be fed. Or, hey, come on, Creedy, come on. You know, I'm doing
Let
a little ripping.
Let the midnight special.
Right. Well, I'm.
Shine the light on me.
That was Let another influence from my mom, by the way.
Shine the ever, right? I mean,
yep,
that's not
sure.
that. It's just updated and bettered.
Well, I think what I was trying to get to is she planted the seed about the songwriter.
Right.
And I started paying attention to people like that. She loved Hoagy Carmichael, so I ended
right.
up loving Hoagy Carmichael for sure. And began trying to write songs at very early, you know. I can actually specifically remember one when I was 8 years old because the guy, it was the rhythm and blues radio station before school, and there was some commercial, and they used to read these things. They weren't big produced things. And the guy was saying, do you have the wash day blues? Well, you should try, and I'm sure it was some detergent for washing
right.
your clothes, right? But what stuck in my head was wash day blues because I love blues. I was listening to the blues station, right? All the way to school, I was trying to write a song about wash day blues. And of course, blues, and right around then is Muddy Waters. I didn't know his name then. Willie Dixon was a songwriter, but the riff was dun 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 dun. Are you going dun 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 dun? I got the watch day blues. Dun 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 dun. Somebody help me, help me. You know, that sort of thing. I did that all. I was, in other words, writing a song.
Right.
And I did that forever. I kept doing that, and I mean, I wrote a lot of really bad songs all the way through the rest of grammar school,
and I told a lot
high,
of, and
high
I,
school.
And I told a lot of bad jokes. That's how you get where you're going.
Yes.
You know, you got to be bad before you're good.
Right. That's right. And you got to try.
Yes.
You can't just go, someday I'm going to write great
right.
songs. No,
and
you got to be doing it.
And it's so satisfying when you know, you put in those dues and you go through all that pain and then you get to the place where, oh, now they are good. I know they're good, and the audience knows they're good. I mean, that's jokes and songs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing I love more than my job, my real job at Real Time on HBO. I love, like, delivering for the audience. Like,
yeah.
I know what you expect me to do, and I'm going to do it for you and fulfill your expectations. And, you know, same thing in music. You fulfill their expectations. You rise to the occasion, you give them what they want. Because if you don't, somebody else will.
Tell me if this is true or not. It certainly is for me most of the time. When I work, I mean, I'm talking about nowadays, I've had the process happen quite a few times, and I understand the process. I've experienced the process, and therefore I know when, I'm talking about one that's good, by the way. So,
right.
Okay. So you get to a point, you put in the work, you've probably written a lot of garbage first, then finally you have, and you know it. You know it before you even go there. The audience is your vindication.
Right.
Right?
Right.
They react. I mean, you're laying it out there.
But
your pants are down, so to speak, and you're not really sure.
You must have.
But when they come back at you like that is good, that's okay.
But you must
okay,
have had one
it.
Or two that you thought were great and they didn't.
Well, have I done that?
I'm asking.
Hmm?
I'm asking if you ever had one where you thought, oh, this is great, and the audience just went, no. Because I'm thinking of like.
Yeah.
You remember?
Well, I don't know that the song had a chance, but I know there's a song I wrote called Mystic Highway that was on an album
Yeah, there are lost songs that are great.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I bet you it is. I mean, I make a...
And I get requests for it, but, you know, that gets into the, what do you call it, the homogenization of all the numbers.
I make a hobby of collecting those songs. People are always saying to me, like, wow, you have the best playlist. Where'd you get that song? I'm like, I listen to all the stuff, and people miss this one. But there it is.
That's like, one that I felt like it slipped into the cracks or
the
something.
The Rascals, who were ascendant at the same time as you.
A little ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, a little ahead. But also, like...
At the same time, People Gotta Be Free.
Gotta Be Free was a huge hit in, like, that era. Okay. And then the last two, I bet you they thought were great, and I still think are great, but the audience never liked. They put out a single called Heaven.
Oh.
You remember that?
I don't.
See?
No, I don't.
Exactly.
I just know that there are bands...
Right.
I did it, too.
What?
You reach that end or whatever... And then in the cliff, you know, and then they just, for some reason,
sometimes it's just like, musically, it's better. It's like more sophisticated, but the audience is left behind. I mean, artists have done that for me. Like, you left me behind. I'm sure it's great, and I'm sure you and your musician friends think it's groundbreaking, but I don't give a shit. I'm just the young man in the 22nd row.
You said it perfectly.
Yeah, I'm just the audience, and you can be somewhat ahead. I like that. I like something I've never heard before, quite, but you can't leave me that far behind.
That's like, absolutely the truth.
And that happens to a lot of musicians. They get too into their own heads.
Oh, I think it happens to every human being.
Yeah, in a way.
And especially musicians. The point, there's a thing, look, I've been my own worst victim of this. When you're doing something, and instead of you just resonating with your own likes and dislikes, your own filter, you know, your own value system, you're going along, you know, so-and-so is going to think this is really great. And that rock critic over there is going to, you know, or Betty Lou is going to, you know, whatever. You're doing something, and it's... For cockeyed reasons that you're doing it,
right.
And you end up with this thing that it seems like all the buttons are pushed in the right place, you know, but it wasn't really you.
You got to please yourself.
And what normally happens to that stuff is exactly what you just described. The band hits that wall. It's like, what are they doing? Why'd they do that? You know, what's with the trombones in the middle of the violin solo?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Did you ever see the hysterically funny movie that Judd Apatow did called Walk Hard? No? It's so funny. You got to watch that one. You'll love this. Get your girl tonight. Dial up Walk Hard. You'll laugh your ass off. It's like, remember they did a bio of Johnny Cash?
Yeah.
Called Walk Tall, I think, or whatever. What was his catchphrase?
I
walk the line. Okay. So this is like, it's kind of like doing a parody of that.
Okay.
But it's like the musical history. And when they get to the 60s, like, you know, the guy who has been a big star, and he just goes off on this thing where he wants, like, you know, tribesmen coming in, hitting a gong, and, you know, all this crazy.
God, this all sounds so familiar.
Really? And you had that kind of syndrome
around
you?
No, but I've seen it.
Yes, you've
seen
it.
You know, and bands that you loved even, where it's suddenly, oh, no.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. And sometimes it's just because they probably run out of material, or they fight. You know, I always quote that Timothy B. Schmidt in the Eagles special when he says, I have never known a rock band that wasn't always breaking up at every moment.
Yeah.
And I have never been in a rock band, but... You know, I know what they fight about. You didn't like my song, and you took that girl.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, your brother. Didn't you fight with your brother horribly? Like, all rock bands where there's brothers,
you know,
they fight. The Oasis dudes.
It was that way. It was internal.
What?
It was internal.
What does that mean?
Well, I didn't... How can I say this? It's been such a long, hard thing to understand, especially because my Tom passed away. And as an adult, I reached a point. I want to say this part first. I reached a point where I finally, as best I could, understood his emotions or his very human and understandable desires, I guess you'd say, right?
And jealousies. I mean, come on.
But see, boom.
You can't,
I mean. When it was all, when the 1970, 69, 70, when Creedence started to really get tense, and yet we were on top of the world. I mean, that's what the song, top. Have You Ever Seen the Rain, is all about.
Really?
It's the brightest blue, wonderful day that we all dreamed about, and it's fucking raining. What are you guys so unhappy about? And I never knew.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
Tom
got really quiet, you know, instead of being the normal. It was really quiet, but there'd be these, you know, little jabs every now and verbal stuff, right? And then the band broke up. And I mean, the whole time, you know, to follow Timothy B. Schmidt's phrase, it was the last year of it, or year and a half, was
egg
like,
shelf.
Ah, and I couldn't understand, what is this?
Just like in a relationship. When you're walking on eggshells,
yep.
It's just the worst fucking place to be outside of a Hanoi prison camp in 69. It's just, I've been there. Whatever kind of relationship it is, when you like know whatever you say, you have to like... You have to be like a White House press spokesman.
Yeah.
Everything you say has to be so lawyered so that it doesn't offend. Oh, it's just it's like, who can live like that? And I'm sure that's what it is in a band.
Well, all those years later, that's 1970, 72-ish, and it still goes on. You know, because I still see Tom now and then, family stuff and all that. Then I meet Julie. That's 86. Somewhere around... 90 or 89 or 90 or 91, I'm talking with, you know, we're driving in the car. We kind of know each other pretty well. We've been together 2, 3, or 4 years, something like, you know, it's really easy and delightful and stuff. And probably another time I'm telling one of those stories and she goes, I mean, she says, well, they're jealous. I went, what?
It's so obvious.
They're jealous.
It's so obvious.
But I didn't know that word, and I didn't know I didn't understand any of that. I just wondered, what the hell? Proud Mary's been number one for, you know, 72 weeks. Why are you mad?
Because, I'll tell you why, and you may fight about a million things, but people don't fight about what they're really fighting about. What they're really fighting about is, God gave you the talent, and I'm your brother, and why wasn't it even? Why didn't I get half of it? Why did you get all of it? You think it's easy being this guy?
You sound
Everybody
like the Smothers
knows.
Brothers.
What?
You sound like the Smothers Brothers.
Same. Well, it's similar.
Yeah, they need a stick out of it.
But certainly, definitely, in groups. And,
but you see, like, the point there is, I wasn't jealous. I didn't know there was a problem.
You shouldn't be jealous. You have the talent. The person who has the talent is not the jealous one. It's the person who wants the talent who doesn't have it. Not that he wasn't talented.
But that's the point.
But like, it was obvious from the beginning, like it is with so many bands. I mean, is it,
you of course.
Know, was Justin Timberlake ever not going to go out on his own? No. Okay, it's just obvious there's one person with the talent and there's three other people. There are exceptions. I mean, the Stones are a team and the Beatles, blah, blah, blah. But in a lot of bands, it's just one guy and as nice and as talented as the other three or four are, you could get along with three or four other people. One person is doing all the work here, Simon and Garfunkel. I mean, why did they break up? It just, I think there's a documentary on it right now, and it's just... There's just something very uneven that was in that relationship that was always going to explode. It was just always going to explode because it's not a situation that lends itself to stasis.
Yeah.
It's explosive when it's uneven like that.
The thing is, I think if a person is, let's say, has less understanding or less talent for doing that thing, then they probably should figure out how to do something else. I'm talking about still music, still a song, still, but figure out another way that isn't directly
there is no other way
competitive with that thing.
Well, there is no nothing else is as competitive as being able to write 25 great hits. Okay, that is sui genere. No, there's what else is he going to do? Write songs and then paint them? No, I mean you either are.
I didn't mean it quite like that.
You either are or you ain't. You know, and if you're the ain't, it's not good. And it's just always eating away on you in the inside. And you're fighting over a million things. Like you took that girl and you ate your last Oreo and you did this and you did that. But that's always what it is. Mom liked you best. That was the Smothers Brothers catch bit. Mom always liked you best.
Right.
And, you know, ironically, it was twisted around because Tom was the one who really ran the show. He was the, anyway. Look, I could talk to you all night. I'm so glad I met you. I got to go back to my day job. But man, you know, I just got to say before we end this, you have given me so much pleasure. That's the thing about music. It never gets old. The songs you listen to for so many years, including all the stuff you did as a solo artist, such pleasure you have given me. And I just have to say thank you because, you know, I mean,
I enjoyed this. I want to hear your iPod.
We got to do it.
Yeah.
You live still in California?
Yeah. Okay. Just down the 101 a couple of blocks. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Enjoyed this very much.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
That was so much fun.
That was cool.
I can't believe I got to meet one of my musical heroes.